Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? What's happening again? Once again, excuse me. Once again, it's that time. I am the person that is commonly known as Citizen Payne, and this is the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network at the 8 p.m. hour on, was it, Wednesday evening? today is what? The 11th of July. We've been off for a minute. We're probably going to be on maybe every other week, or maybe schedule the day, because I'm missing out on the NORC International Black Film Festival that takes place over the summer, y'all. And I've been missing out on it every Wednesday. So we're going to have to change up our schedule a little bit in terms of when we broadcast live to you and when you hear the show and such. We wanted to talk about a few things. It's just me tonight and Byron and Wayne. My mom is taking us some time off and has gone to a concert this evening, taking some of the festivities over the summer. And so just us talking, where we had to talk about I'm just tripping on the Trump guy getting a Supreme Court nominee. All this stuff that's going down here like a big snowball, like a big-ass snowball, is just really incredible. The guy that committed treason gets a Supreme Court pick. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. But I'm going to go to our host, co-host, my brother, Byron Saunders. Let him in. I know he's on the line. Byron, what's happening, bro?
Well, another blessed day in paradise. Summertime in the city. Hot time. You know, and
That's always good.
Absolutely. And as they say, when the mice is, well, when the cat's away or the mice will play, or the mice are away, the cats will play. We're glad that that Trump dude is away, because he's showing his true colors as being the idiot that we all know that he is, insulting our most trusted allies in NATO, and of course, the leaving behind the mess in our country when we still have those kids separated from their parents and no remedy in sight because the administration is clueless, had no kind of responsibility whatsoever other than to just be mean-spirited sons of you-know-what.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, it's this whole regime with these people. It's just bizarre now. It's time to stop this lunacy with the hatred, and it's just backwards. I mean, hatred is one thing, but then to be ignorant of the facts and all of the things that have been established before they came, and think that they're recreating everything from the beginning or turning everything. It's just, you know, the complete arrogance and the narcissism from this guy is, you know, it's detrimental. It's detrimental to the nation, and you know, it's a matter of national security to a certain degree that this idiot is running the show like it's his own personal company and just doing whatever he wants to do. You know.
You know, and the one thing that's really very disturbing is that when you consider yourself, as our nation does, to be the number one hashtag superpower, okay? And there's no question. You know it. I know it. The rest of the world knows that the number one superpower in the world is the United States of America. Now, being number one also comes with a responsibility of knowing that because you're the biggest, you're the baddest, you're the richest, that you accept the fact that you spend more being number one to make sure the rest of the world stays in order. You don't whine about the fact that 2% of a GDP of a nation, of one of the NATO nations, is not owning up to their fair share, when the responsibility why you created this united organization called NATO was to protect the sovereignty of the Western European nations against the Eastern European nations. At that time, it was the United Soviet Socialist Republic and China and all the other sort of called nations that were against Europe. So you accept the responsibility of paying for being number one. Now, we got a president who is chastising our friends across the ocean from Great Britain. He's up there in Great Britain tomorrow, thinking that he's going to walk in there like some kind of royalty to the Windsor estate. I don't think so. He's a cheap trailer park trick, and that's all that he is and ever will be. I don't care how much money he has.
Yeah, I mean, what you were saying, just from the very beginning, I mean, you know, before we get into the complexities of even the office, the position, and just all of the notions and ideas and concepts and just all of the thought process that goes into that, just on a very human level, very human, personal level. If you're that person who's the best, toughest running one in the room and the most powerful one, on a very human level, it's to be benevolent and kind is because you know that you can run the show and beat everybody and to, you know, overpower everybody. I mean, just on a very human level, it's beholden of you to be, you know, a kind person because of that.
Yeah.
You know, the great power to is given that whole thing. Let's bring in our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Jumping in the conversation. What's up, Brother Wayne? How you doing?
Okay, excuse my voice. I'm getting over a summer cold. I'm almost at the end of it, but if my voice should conk out, that's the reason why. But, you know, we're trying to survive in this world of 45, and I just think this man's behavior is despicable. I know that we seem to have this as a constant mantra each week, but every week there's a new low, you know, and I think what he's doing with these kids, I'm assuming this is what we're alluding to with respect to his behavior. There's no moral compass, you know, he's lost. He's the big bully, and he makes his own rules as he goes along, you know. The Supreme Court pick is about changing the rules. Everything is about changing the rules.
Yeah, we're actually talking about NATO, but, I mean, it's all the same, actually. I mean, the Supreme Court thing is really the icing on the cake. But, you know, that kind of tracks back to the siege that the Republicans were laying back then, you know. Really back to when Big George was setting up stuff for the court to lean right. When H.W. Bush was kind of planting those seeds and they were able to come to fruition, and the other ones were just about coming old enough where W got to appoint a couple of people, right? Because I think between the two of them, they got more appointments than Clinton and Obama, I believe.
Because Obama, they did a Stonewall Act, and quite frankly, two wrongs don't make it right. But I really feel, given this man's history, I mean, we were surprised by the departing actions of Kennedy, who's leaving, because Reagan, if I'm not mistaken, put him in, and you know, he really did not turn out to be the conservative that they expected him to be. We may be surprised, but I don't think we should take a chance. You know, right away he came out with the rhetoric during his acceptance speech about how his mama taught at an African American school in Washington D.C. They know how to set you up. You know, they're very good at showing, you know, I have an open mind, but when it comes to making decisions, you know, I just I wonder about Roe. I wonder about immigration. You know, because he's already acting that way. And with respect to NATO,
I don't even have an open mind anymore, bro. I mean, I used to just automatically expect good intentions. You know, like how I believe that the Star Spangled Banner was a song written with good intentions, and even though it can be said that, you know, Francis Scott Key, you know, do a little basic search of him. He set his slaves free, helped some slaves, but he also represented some people, slave owners and runaway slaves. All of that, I mean, that's irrelevant bullshit to me. You know, it's like,
yeah,
he crossed the line. He was a slave owner. He did this. So why should I honor and stand to a song written by a dude who was a slave owner? That's the bottom line to me. I don't give a shit about, and I don't curse, but we're just the guys talking. I don't give a shit about, well, he ended up being a great, it's like they always want you to get over it and overlook all that. I'm not looking overlook nothing no more, especially now at 50-some-odd years of age and realizing that it is generationally that we have to fight this battle of freedom with these people, that we have to constantly fight. I used to think when I was a kid, oh, it'll be all right. When I get older, you know, seeing my parents involved with civil rights and dealing with those issues of the day, and assuming that everything will be okay when I get older, or based people take you on an individual basis, you know, you assume that, well, once they get to know me, or once they see I'm not what they expect or whatever stereotype they think, that might change their opinion or make them be more civil. And that's not necessarily the case. So I've ceased to assume good intentions from these people. Now it's incumbent upon them, the burden is on them to approve their good intentions for the most part. And that's from a jaded, you know, that makes you jaded, right? I understand that.
Exactly.
That's the world as it is. That's the world I was born into. So, you know, if we talk about fairness and parity in the world and equity in the world, some people got to stand up and fess up and say, yeah, that was wrong, or, you know, ancestors did this or whatever. Even if the argument is, well, you know, my ancestors, yeah, they were slaves. I feel whenever you bring up slavery and bring up all the whole issues that go along with that, white people automatically get defensive. And I can imagine I would too if I was white and black person bring up slavery, and it's pretty much a foregone fact that most whites own slaves. So go naturally feel guilty. So you got to let them know, not you. We know you didn't do it because, you know, some want to make that claim. Well, I didn't own slaves, but you're the beneficiary of that system. So at least acknowledge that. And in your acknowledgement, it shows me you're at least saying we're starting with the same, you know, foundation. Start with the same set of facts. We agree upon the same set of facts. But if you don't even agree upon those set of facts, that initial situation caused shit to be messed up from then on, uneven, until we take time out to make it even, then we can't even talk. We can't even start off with a conversation because we're coming from two different places. So, you know, I don't assume good intentions anymore.
You're reading from the script You're reading from the script of C. Michael Dyson. Every time I hear that premise, you know, that has to be laid out first before we could have a civil discussion about something.
Well,
you know, and this is what they miss.
What the admission of just a basic
admission,
premise, you know?
Exactly.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, the acknowledgement. I don't need to mention it. I acknowledge that president existed. Even if the argument is coming back at me, is like, you know, I would assume if I would frame it, or I could see the argument, someone saying, well, you know, people were doing what they did. They were going along with the crowd. So, yes, my ancestors might have had slaves, but it also might have been a survival thing. Maybe they just thought that was normal. You know, you can't blame everybody for doing what everybody else is doing in a certain period of history until we get to the point where everybody is really, you know, some people have a mob mentality, so they go along with what society is doing, and they make shit okay in their minds. And even if that is the argument that they might try to use in justifying possibly that their certain ancestors might own slaves, I can almost see that. Okay, I can almost see that. They went along with the flow. They went along to get along. They owned a couple slaves. Okay. But if you're not even acknowledging some fucking, some basics, this is the K Thompson Live Show, not the Eric Pang Show, so we got to speak a little different. But if you're not even acknowledging some basics about things, we can't even, you know, I can't even get with you. Byron, I haven't heard you comment for a minute. I don't know if you, I'm sure you've got a lot to comment about K Thompson on the line.
I'm on the sidelines, Eric, trying to push the button that blocks out your words.
Delay, right?
I can't catch up with the 7-second delay part of this. So, you know.
You know,
the The summer breeze.
But I'm feeling you, my brother. I'm feeling you, okay, because you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, at the point at which I asked the question on my Facebook page, do you trust white people? And you should see the comments that I got. Some wanted to be more clarified. Some would say, no, I trust some. And then you get some to say, I trust God. Then you get some who say, oh, no, absolutely not. But the fact is, we as people of color have a right to ask that question. We're looking at every constitutional amendment that's been challenged since the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, every constitutional amendment that has been challenged by those politicians and people in the position of power, they have challenged every last one that had the opportunity to equal the playing field when it came to respect people of color. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You look back on the history, and this is what I call benign treason. Because we have a federal government, we have a Justice Department that's supposed to step in and come down heavy on every one of those people who, at the point at which they took an oath to protect the laws and protect the citizens of the United States of America and its laws and its Constitution, and all along they're circumventing it, trying to undermine all of the areas that we're trying to equal the playing field to get to the ideal of democracy. Now, at some point, either you're going to abide by the law that you put into place, or you're going to have to be charged for the treason that you're committing. And it's high time, because think about this. We have a judge who is being considered. And I'm going to get to his religion in a moment, because he's a Catholic. And the Pope is our Pope. That's right. Who is saying all along that we must give consideration to the aborted fetuses as a concept that it has well come to its point where Roe versus Wade has to be respected. I mean, when God aborts a child, and it's a natural order, we call it, what do we call that? When a woman has naturally aborted a child. Yes, exactly. So who are you going to blame? You're going to blame God? You're going to put God under the microscope and call him irresponsible and breaking the law when it's his law that we are following to begin with? See, abortion is a natural order of life.
Mm.
Now, I agree that if you're going to be pro-life, then you cannot just be pro-life and then subject that child to a cage when they're trying to come into a place where freedom exists, and you're going to separate their parents, separate a child who's under 5 years old and expect them. We got a situation where there are children right now who don't even recognize their own parents because this country, intervened and separated them in one of the most vile concepts of political machinations ever conceived. And it didn't start yesterday. It started back when they brought us over in 1619. Come on now. We got history on all of this. So this is nothing new. That's right. So we have to the precedent has been set. So there's a point at which when we come back to, will America sustain and survive this only if they believe that the laws and the Constitution are worthy of our most profound respect, no matter of race, color, creed, sexual preference, or whatever.
Well, that's what it challenges. It challenges these people on their own values that they state that they have, right?
Yes.
It challenges them on the very values that claim that they have and adhere to and are their way of life? Or is it really a fascist society and how you want it to be, and ruling how you want it? And, so it really is, and it's showing what they're trying to do, showing where their loyalties lie. They're not interested in a democratic society. They're interested in a privileged, I guess, oligarchy, fascist, imperialist society, whatever. you know, that favors a race, class, and privilege, I would suppose.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
That's right. And I mean, and that's why I started off by saying that if you really truly believe we are the world's number one superpower, then the superpower who claims that has a moral responsibility long before it has a military responsibility. Because the moral responsibility that you establish says that you are here to serve for the betterment of mankind, to feed the hungry,
right,
clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, give hope to the hopeless. And if you agree and really live by that code of ethics, you'll be the greatest leader in the world. Now, you're supposed to be representing the number one nation in the world who has that as its moral code and compass. And then when you start tearing that down and you allow yourself to be viewed by foreign nations as hypocritical because you can't even maintain the status of your own people in your country when you're allowing people to beat up on each other, you're sitting there showing that you can cage human beings like animals. Who does that?
Well, he's just really revealing. He's the one they keep in the closet, in the attic, right? Because he's really revealing.
That's right.
You know, I mean, the whole thing about America propping itself up, or it's propped itself up as being the world's saving, the leader, and this and that. That's always been kind of a facade to a certain degree, also, right?
That's,
I mean,
that's right.
We've been as it has served our interest, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's why we've involved in some of the stuff we've been involved in around the world.
That's why some nations can't stand. That's right. And then, of course, now here you have young people, not MS-13, young people who are going to always remember how they were treated when they came across that border after spending months trying to escape the oppression and dire consequences of being in nations that treated them worse. And they get the treatment like this, who do you think is going to be the next terrorist coming out of that group? Who's going to be loving the United States of America after they got this kind of treatment?
Or who's going to be the developed, democratic, progressive, liberal person that's really, you know, a leader in that area? I mean, you know, I believe that that's just as possible, too. Someone to come out of that experience, you know.
The one thing that gets to me is this man, you know, just piggybacking on what Byron is saying, is that he'll turn around and say, I'm not against you all coming here, but you got to come in here the right way. You got to come in here like all the others did, you know, the right way.
Like his wife did. Like his wife didn't come in. Okay.
Right.
The very prime
right.
example. Let's just start with citizen
exactly.
number one.
Right. You know, go ahead. I mean, the deal is that there's always an exception, you know, when it comes to them. You know, and this
well,
is what he's...
That's where the supremacy comes in, right?
Right. This is
so,
where he gets off, you know. He's and what bothers me... He uses this as the great Reverend Jesse Jackson would call him Mayor Juliana to promote the campaign of public opinion. Every week he's on, every day he's on, trying to shape the minds of white folk out here to say that this man has a decent agenda. You know, he is going to change things for the better, for the better. Of a certain select few, and that's it.
Exactly. So when we evaluate a Supreme Court nominee, that this individual who wrote on the legality of inciting a criminality of a sitting president of the United States confirms to me as logic, and I'm no lawyer, I'm no politician, but I do believe in common sense and logic, and what your nominee is telling me, because he wrote an opinion about you not being charged as a sitting president, says you've already, your nominee is basically confirming obstruction of justice, putting it into play.
Right.
So what else am I supposed to really?
And that was the only reason why he was selected. The only reason why he was selected.
And then, of course, when I look back, as I said, with the history of all of the treason and obstruction of constitutional law that as it relates to people of color. So I look at now a nominee who I'm going to give fair shake to, whose opinions on affirmative action, whose opinions on voter registration and voter oppression, whose opinions are contrary to constitutional law, is affirming to me that your agenda is to maintain white supremacy in America. That's why you're supporting the conservative candidate. Nothing else.
It's the complicity of the Congress and all these other these so-called establishment Republicans, right? And these people who allegedly tarp themselves up to say that they're not like that.
Yes.
And indirectly, gentlemen, we are paying for what happened with Bill Clinton because his opinion came out of that investigation. I mean, here it is, we have the Me Too movement, but perhaps, you know, if you're guilty, you're guilty, and, you know, you just can't have a double standard, you know? But I would hate to think that we got to go through two more years of this mess.
Well, I think there is a balm in Gilead, okay? The cloud that's being burst is revealing, not just to us, but to the world, how corrupt this particular swamp is, and totally and here's the thing that's I had a friend who works in the federal government. He's a GS-16. He's making six figures, and I said, I want you to think about something. The government freeze on hiring, the rollback of all of the current things that Obama put into place, and other administrations who tried to, you know, place our nation on an even keel as best as they could. Truth of the matter is this: reduction of federal government in all of its phases, especially with hiring and the hiring freeze that's currently in place, is all about deconstructing the African-American middle class. It has nothing to do with anything else because with the migration of 1950 engaged African-Americans coming out of the South, coming into the industrial North, Washington, D.C., and New York and Chicago, Boston, all of those cities had the lure of government employment, not the blue-collar employment, because that was reserved for unions, and we know the situation with unions and how that was corrupted because of nepotism. But it was the lure of working with the federal government. And from 1950 to 2000, you had a burgeoning African-American middle class and upper middle class as a result of federal government employment. Now,
what are a few places that you could make sure that the rules that the federal government put in place in terms of fair hiring practices were going to be followed was with the federal government. That was the first place you know where those are going to be strictly enforced, right? So it made sense that, you know, and you're exactly right. The times I visited D.C., my cousin being in office, I've noticed there are a hell of a lot of on Capitol Hill African American employees working in a lot of those, a lot of jobs.
Hey, I'll even go a step further that my father raised five of us from the 1950s because, you know, he knew how to rebuild televisions for GE and RCA, but because of his color, he couldn't get a full time job. So he went to the post office. And back in the day, we're talking 1952, 53, 54. You know, five kids raised. Thank you.
That's right. So when you start eliminating those programs and you go start cutting into the very essence of the power base of the black community, the freed slaves. Let's just take it back even after the Emancipation Proclamation, because every effort to bring us into the playing field has been met with reverse objections. all the time, not just any, not just 1 year. I'm talking about every year since the defeat of the Southern consciousness and their surrender at Appomattox.
It's like the basic
That's
part
right.
of slavery, right?
That's it.
You know, takes it from black people.
Yes.
Yep.
And why did it take Texas 2 years? Why did it take Texas as a state 2 years to let their slaves know that they were freed by the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, but it wasn't until 1865 that they got the word? Who does
Juneteenth.
That?
Juneteenth.
Juneteenth. Thank you. So then
yeah.
you want me to celebrate 4th of July as Independence Day? For what? So you
yeah,
can
right.
spend another $10 to $12 million blowing up firecrackers, and we still got people in the streets who are hungry. Come on!
Look at the host of The View. She's just stepped down as an attorney, you know, in her own rights. I think she was a local
yeah.
district attorney. I can't think of her first name is Sunny Hostin.
Yeah, right.
She was vacationing. I don't know if you saw the story a couple of days ago over the holiday in a town that I literally spent my summers as a kid in, Sag Harbor, which is all gentrified
yeah.
now. It was the only spot
oh, yeah.
back in the day that black folk could buy beachfront property. The Belafontes used to be out there, Powell's, you know, all the prominent black families who could afford a home on the beachfront property would go to this beautiful hamlet. And, you know, now that other folks have figured out how to get out there, and I'm not saying I don't want to paint with a broad stroke, because there are some progressive whites who will live side by side, and they get it, they understand it.
Yeah.
But the bottom line
well,
is, you know, you go there with other professional black women on the beach, and a herd. Because what do they refer to us? We're a mob, or you know, when we're wilding in Central Park, you have 30 kids wilding, yelling all sorts of racial epithets at professional black women. I think that's freaking despicable. It's the sign of the times.
So
and 45
what
is responsible for that culture.
Yeah.
What happened? What was the story?
It was in Sag Harbor, Long Island, Sag Harbor Hills. Sag Harbor is the only spot, and I'm just going back to what little I know as a kid, where black folks in the 30s and the 40s
oh, yeah.
and the 50s were able to buy beachfront property in the Hamptons.
I'm familiar.
Anywhere in this country. You know, it was just, in fact, my old man, I was, you know, once had a house out there, but he sold it to send us to Catholic school, which is a whole other story. But the bottom line is, the thing is that this place has been a historical settlement and vacation ground for people of color for years. She goes out
yeah.
there, you know, for a few days to vacation with her professional girlfriends, and she gets ostracized and ridiculed and all sorts of degradation, you know, by young white kids out there. And the minute they get the cameras up and start rolling, they hide, or they, it wasn't me, it was somebody else, you know, that nonsense,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I just think
her
that's
name,
sad.
It is. It's part of what's going on. Her name is Sunny Hostin, and she's
right.
one of the, she's one of the women on The View.
Yeah, on The View.
Who, yeah. So it was a 4th of July incident. And it's multiplying. Yeah, that type of incident is multiplying as a White House who declares their local issues and their national
right.
referendum on race.
But you
want
to think that we've lived past this now. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I know before I was born, when my dad first came to this country, he used to go down to Asbury Park with his mother, and
mm-hmm.
they underwent the same kind of ridicule and degradation there. So it's not something
yeah.
that's just germane to the New York area, you know.
Right.
It's just one of those things.
They're gonna be who they're gonna be wherever we are, man. That's why. See, I'm not. I don't. I don't. I'm not expecting any different type of behavior. I'm not expecting. That's what I was talking about. The expectance of goodwill. You know, the presumption that these people are going to have goodwill towards us. Don't have that anymore. So I expect
right.
them, and I guess it's a chip you carry on your shoulder. But it is what it is. You know, I mean, to my vibe is like the hell with them, F them. You know, I'm at a certain age. It's like we got to go through. You know, it's like I want to say to some of these individuals that reach out to me on Facebook that I've known that I'd be Caucasian from junior high and, you know, high school and all these years, and they want to reach out to you. And, you know, you see some of the comments that people make on their posts about certain things and see how they're outraged at the Roseanne treatment that Roseanne got, but not outraged about the words she used. Outraged
right.
about people saying that Donald Trump, about Bill Maher saying Donald Trump looked like an orangutan, but never speaking up when the same shit was said about Barack Obama. So, you know, and to have these individuals that I know that have, you know, are my age, have seen some of the shit that certain things have gone on during our lifetime. So my vibe is like, don't act like you don't know or you haven't noticed that there's institutional racism in this country. You know, you can't do that. I mean, there's three types of these people to me. The ones who are either full of shit and they just are kind of going along with it, the ones who are oblivious, and the ones who are down with that type of behavior, you know?
You're right. And see, the problem that we are confronted with is that we who try to adhere to justice and the law get caught up when it's not being applied equally. And so that's why I say, you know, now I have to, as a historian, I got to go back and look at all of the injustices that have been committed.
We have no recourse. But before you go any further,
we have no recourse.
We really have no recourse, right? I mean, you know, Malcolm X was talking one way and Dr. King was talking another, because in a real life situation, let's say, okay, revolution, yeah. everybody come out in the streets and fight. If you're only 13% of the population,
right.
that's not going to
right.
work out well for you, right? And if you have
right.
so systematically where they thin the population where it can never be on, you know, equal numbers, you know, not since what? Like the early 1800s or 1700s, I think, at one time there were more slaves in the country, population-wise, more slaves in the country than slave owners, and they quickly
yes.
worked to reverse that. So just from a number standpoint, that would not be the case. So you have to go a nonviolent, peaceful route or a collaborative route of righteous people from all colors and whatnot. It's just, you know. I don't know why those numbers never seem to be working out on our side. That's the thing, you know, or why they work out for only a short period of time.
Well, I would think some people get it, and I think some people see, you know, the despicable behavior of this man. I had an experience on July 4th. And I would have felt that it would renew my faith in my fellow person, although I still don't know what led to all this. But, you know, short story, I went food shopping. I wasn't feeling well. It's at the beginning of my little problem with my summer cold or what have you. And I live not far from the Connecticut borderline. And one of the first towns as you go north in Connecticut along US 1 is Greenwich, Old Greenwich, Stamford, places like that. And I just felt like driving that day in 20 minutes outside of New York, and I just went up there to food shop. I got into this particular store. I'm not going to say which one, but it's a regular grocery store you'd see anywhere, you know. And I'm looking for some things, and long story short, I kept bumping into this Asian woman with this biracial teenager, her daughter. And it was at a point where it was almost comical. Long story short, and some of our Asian brethren, they don't see everything because they've been poisoned with the same crap that a lot of people from other countries come here, and their perception of black people is radically different from what it should be. But I engaged this person in conversation, and at the end of the day, and I don't know, I mean, I've been around 66 years now. I've been married once, and I can't think even my ex, I can't think of no girlfriend, ex-wife, no one, no complete stranger ever paid $80 worth of groceries for me because they thought I was a nice guy. No one. And I just said, and I mean, I was, I guess you had to be there in the moment and see what was going on. And it's not like I looked destitute. I opened my wallet and I said, listen, I don't need your money, you know, that sort of thing. But the deal is that her action sent a boomerang throughout people who were within the earshot. Because I said, it's so beautiful to know that there are nice people still in the world that we live in. And you could see other whites who were there who felt the same way. I mean, it was just one of those moments. And I want to think that in an area like that where you got people of means, and she certainly had means. I mean, her little Mercedes-Benz, you know, made my little 1902 Honda look like nothing. And it was just one of those things. And I just said to myself, you know, we've been so impacted by the polarization that goes on. And I hear it in your voice, Eric, when you talk about white folks you went to school with and people that you know and probably some of your professional colleagues too. And I understand what you're talking about. But, you know, deep down inside, I want to say that there are some that get it, you know, and it's usually, you know, a socioeconomic thing. And I don't even know if Vera is listening to me, but I am still grateful for what was offered.
Well, you know,
well, I mean, what individual, from my perspective, yeah, of course, there's people who are enlightened. And you know, there's people who are like that. It's just that you have to preface things that way, that the whole does not reflect where we want it to be, right? You know, everybody's talking about Obama. The Obama era being a post-racial era, and I appreciate all of the examples of people showing us that it's not a post-racial era, and a lot of things that need to be talked about, and you know, people got to fess up about if there's a side of if you're on a side that has done certain things, and you know, you just got to fess up. And I think, like I said earlier, you know, when you bring up these notions, a lot of people feel guilty because that's their ethnic group. And maybe, I don't know. I mean, if they don't believe that, I would assume that they would make that known. You know, I can only assume you're feeling guilty because of some kind of way that you feel now, right? I mean, if somebody told me my relatives, my ancestors held people as slaves, I'd be like, wow, that's fucking bizarre. Excuse my language. I mean, but that's crazy.
I hear you.
And that should be someone's reaction as opposed to, maybe they had a reason. You know, and I'm not saying that is the reaction, but just to find some way to justify it intellectually, like people try to do, like try to justify the separating of the kids from their parents, right? To say, well, they're breaking the law is just like, yo. You know, there's discretion in the application of this law. And that's the reason why your boy Paul Manafort wasn't automatically reprimanded to custody, because the judge used discretion. And it wasn't until he tried to witness tamper with it that they knew that he was really a you-know-what. But that's the whole thing. If we constantly have to phrase it where somebody can see our perspective and not have it just be a humanity issue, an empathy issue, a basic common decency issue, then, you know, there's no really need to try and convince people who might be unconvincible. I'll still talk to them like they're human and stuff, but or not even try to convince. We're talking about even assuming goodwill. I don't assume goodwill anymore. I just let it be
right.
What it's going to be and see where it's going to take us. But like I said,
if I believe in the statistics that are being shown to us, let's just go ahead and give 35 to 40% of his supporters, and represents the base of his supporters in this nation of 350 million people. I'm going to put forward the fact is that they have been emboldened to become bullies. You see, I have if indeed the statistics are showing me that there are a majority of people who are against this man's 35-40% base, they have been bullied into fear. See, a bully's modus operandi is to rule you through fear and intimidation. So that as a minority, they are a minority. To say that the majority of the rest of us who are have empathy, who have sympathy, who understand the plight of those who have been oppressed, but they are afraid to speak up for fear of losing their racial superiority.
Right.
Not that they don't believe that there exists oppression and racism, but that one spot on their soul that keeps them from stepping over the line to say you're wrong is because the base, the 35-40%, are playing to their irrational fear of supremacy. And I don't care how good you are, your good white friends are, they're going to always be able to cut their hair and fall back into that because they are recognized as one of them.
Right.
So
right.
Here we are trying to engage the majority of this nation. I truly believe that there are more of us that are really want to see democracy work than there are those who, like the people who just got pardoned by 45, who wanted to overthrow a compound out there in North Dakota, South Dakota, and he just released them from there from having committed a federal crime. See, this is the stuff that we have to fight against. And ultimately, when America finally does wake up, if she does, and will she wake up in time? Because right now, we're in a vortex going down so fast. I don't care how much Schumer and Pelosi and the rest of them, they're failing us because they don't have the guts and the will to stand up and shut down the federal government. They have the capacity as one of the three arms of this government to shut it down. Will they do it? Think about it. I mean, constitutionally, they have the right to shut it down. They don't need 61 votes. They don't need 51 votes. They can just stop the business of the United States. Totally.
If they shut the government down, it'll kill the Democrats in the midterms.
See?
Well,
once again, because then they're going to hide behind the fact that, well, you shut down the minority whose majority is trying to rule the majority, and ultimately it comes back to, do they have the courage to stand up for the American ideal?
The strategy of the game you have to play, because most people are cattle, right? Because we're dealing with a populace that's cattle on one hand, and also a part of that cattle are also they also follow a racist a certain agenda, right?
Yeah.
Those people that are cattle, and then those under that agenda of racism that aren't cattle, they're actively working, you know, to continue their supremacy and their way of life. And those people even higher up that food chain that don't fall into, you know, they have overlapping interests, a lot of these individuals on
that side, right?
Exactly. That right-wing conservative side. You know, the further up they get, they might not be as active racist as they are. They just use it whenever they use it and care less about anybody, right? That's why he referred to the base as the crazies when he was telling Mitt Romney what he had to do, right? Called all these people the crazy that come up to his rallies that he whips up into, because that's what they are. They're not, you know.
They're not,
there's a population, a certain segment of the population that is not very astute. And is not going to study, and is not really sharp enough to really weigh the issues out and to give it that kind of thought. And also, that is a straight racist that probably wouldn't care anyway, but no matter what the facts say. So, I think if, in light of that, were the Democrats to shut down, and a lot of those people too, by the way, we have a lot of those people on the Democratic side. So, when the Democrats have shut down the government right now, right before the midterms. It would kill us and really kill any further way of being able to combat this guy from doing what he's doing. I mean, just the fact that we've got here in the first place, you know, should be, is a problem for me, because just the way how meek the Democrats have often been when it comes time to get tough and as dirty as the Republicans, you know? Or just, like I've talked about time and time again, our PR sucks. Cats don't speak up on the Democratic side and blow their own horn or say what's really going on. Yeah, we messed up there, but that's because this is what happened on their side. This is what, give people context. Give them the full context, you know? You know, I mean, give, we know people are cattle, but give some people the benefit of the doubt of being able to figure out a little bit more, you know? Like the whole issue of Hillary, I always talk about the Hillary with the pneumonia issue, where they made it a big secret, and they clearly got her on camera, damn near passing out, and they still didn't address what it was. Say the woman had walking pneumonia, and she was a trooper for campaigning with walking pneumonia.
Exactly. Then
you turn it around and make Hillary be a badass because she's so dedicated.
Right.
She's coming out in this 100-degree weather with walking pneumonia. That's how dedicated our candidate is. But
go ahead, Eric. Finish your point.
No, I'll finish that.
Okay. Now, the only thing I was going to say to I'm in complete agreement with you, and I think some Democratic political strategists realize that they got to do the Trump routine. I mean, not necessarily to be as low and despicable, you know, when he goes low, you go high, but higher than the point resonates with the majority. Because you're right. I mean, it's unfortunate that there was no Mariano Rivera on the mound to close her deal. Obama did the best the day of the convention and all that, but sometimes that message is lost in the sauce if it's not repeated time and again. And this
like
guy,
that.
We already see how he plays dirty. So I don't know who they have now. I mean, sometimes I hear Cuomo, and I think it's in his heart to do something in 2020. You know, there are other people out there. This young Latina that came out of the Bronx and Queens, although, you know, she's brand new to the system, I'm just waiting to see what happens with her. And already they're ready to disparage her, you know, because of her background isn't what it was said to be and stuff like that. I mean, the deal is that we need to know how to make as much noise to you know, the squeaky wheel gets the most work done. We have to be out there. We have to figure out a way to get past this man's reality TV campaign that he does. And that's it. We need people who are going to go on like Giuliani every week and talk about what it is that we're doing, you know.
I mean, you know, we need the type of, I mean, the whole thing is when someone doesn't want to get down with you, like, you know, in the streets, in the hood, you got to prove you can get down like that when you need to get down, right? So I don't want to fight you. I will. Boom, boom, take this, let you know that I'm not doing it, and let's elevate our argument to the next level. So what the Democrats need is somebody who said, yeah, I could tag you up, Donnie. I could set your big chief little hands. I could call you, you know, you want to start calling names or whatever. Do that, tag it. But it's funny, isn't it, everybody? But, yeah, we shouldn't do that. And help.
Right.
And when you get everybody's attention, like the comedian, you get everybody's attention. And now I got everybody's attention. Here, let me talk to you about this here. This is what we really need to be focused on. This is what we need. It's all night to go back and forth. We can score points all day long. But it's not getting us anywhere. And if you want to talk that way, I can talk to you like that, Don, but we don't have time for that. Just take the bull by the horn and take the argument. Nobody ever did that.
Exactly.
And like I said, Democrats, we always want to be, you know, the other example I often use is the example of the locker room talk thing. Well, everybody wanted to run away from that. Democrats never talk that way. Bullshit. We're all men. We've heard guys talk about that in the locker room. Maybe you don't. You know, you might not. Of course, it's not cool, but you have heard dudes talk about that. Okay? It ain't right, so we don't do it, but we know about it. Then everybody's looking at you like real people, not like you're full of shit, not like you're holier than now. You know?
Right.
And so then you even get some of his people. So, yeah, that's right, because the notion what he gets people is at that very base level, talking about people, oh, you got glasses on now, Rick Perry, you're acting like you're smart. Everybody's thinking about that. Everybody's thinking that little lowbrow comment. That's why everybody chuckles when it's said, but you deal with it and you move on. That's how you do that. We've spent so much time wanting to control, like, whatever and look a certain way, you know, and, you know, maybe Hillary wasn't the best candidate because if she couldn't adapt her game, you know, they like the young people that were her campaign managers didn't want her to go to Michigan and those places she didn't miss where she ended up losing the election by, which could help her win the election, right? I mean, it's like,
right.
Come on. You know, Bill Clinton, the whole airplane issue going on, the attorney general. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we need the type of candidates who aren't going to think, you know, that they're privileged, you know, that they have a certain privilege, they could do certain things. Because that shit is just stupid, man. You know, and meanwhile, they're steady, have their nose to the grindstone, plotting, planning, wait, you know. They can't pull
yeah.
off this time. And if they go back undercover like some sort of, you know, demon or something, you know, evaporate back into the ether or whatever, or undercover, you know, to wait their opportunity, you know.
Well, I just, I mean, we got a few months before November, and I just hope we wake up in time, man. It's just shameful. And I hope that we do stand on ceremony the same way they blocked Obama from getting his appointee in. We need to stand up and do the same damn thing, too, you know, period.
That's what I'm saying. It's unbelievable that they're going to use that block Obama's for like half a year and then turn around and just confirm this guy automatically, run it right through. Like, that's not obvious. Just obvious fairness or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the unbelievable part about it. So, I mean, that's something that's really got me tripping out. But I don't know. You want to make a last comment on that, you, Wayne Byron?
Well, I think one of the things about this confirmation hearing that seems to me rather evident is that if indeed he goes through and it comes to the Supreme Court to decide Roe versus Wade, he is obligated constitutionally by law as a Supreme Court justice to side with the law, period. He doesn't get to be political. He has to make Congress act, okay? Congress has the only place where that change can be made and voted on, not at the Supreme Court level. And when the law is made available to change, you know, there's going to be some serious confirmation questions that have to be asked. And if they don't ask, then you have then shut the government down. If they're not answered for the public's consumption, we need to know what side are you on. You either on the side of democracy, where you say justice and equality for all, or you're on the other side where you believe fascism and the right to change the law just because you're a politician in office who doesn't agree with it.
Well, I'm with you on that, Byron. The one thing that I'm concerned about is this Mueller investigation. And I think this is the only reason why Trump called this guy, because of his previous writings. I don't know. That's enough just to stop the movement for him going further.
Well, the Mueller investigation is not just about Trump.
For next week, guys, because we got a minute to 10 seconds to go.
Great
so
show, guys.
Wrap it up right now. We got a minute and 10 to go. We got to wrap it up right now. Wayne Byron wants to say sign off to the people.
Peace and love.
All the
always.
Best. Yeah. I'm sorry, Byron. I feel the same way, man. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Yeah, all right, my
all
friends.
Right.
God bless you.
All right. I'll talk to you guys next week. Wayne, Brother Wayne Gilman.
All the best. Thank you.
All right. All right. This has been the Kate Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Citizen Payne. On the K Thompson Live Show. We broadcast live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m., and we're also archived where you can listen to the show at any time. So we'll be back again next week on the K Thompson Live Show, blogtalkradio.com. Take care.
Thank you.